Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg.
Hey, Fred.
We were just chatting a little bit. We're at the point where we're old enough now that we qualify for a vaccine. And I thought, and you mentioned that you'd got the vaccine, and then like an hour later or later that day, they shut down the site and said, no, we're not doing this anymore. And the news this morning was they're basically saying, we're not going to do that vaccine for a while anymore. We'll not name names or do all this stuff.
I think this will come out much later, and hopefully you won't see a lot of deaths from it.
Yeah.
But the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is like the AstraZeneca vaccine for COVID. Has been shown that there's some people that are having blood clots from it. Now, I've already had it. I had it last week, about a week ago or so.
But you didn't see the recall notice? They didn't email that saying, hey, you know, we got to give you the antidote for the antidote here.
Now, see, we got to take that vaccine back. Can you please show me where your puncture
wound was? We'll suck it back out. Yeah, that'll work.
So we can't do that with vaccines, but we can do that with electronic products and things that we start to see problems, latent defects in the field.
Well, wait a sec. No, that's not always true. I mean, a computer, something at a reasonable price point, a washing machine or a TV or a computer. I mean, usually manufacturers make an effort to say, let us know you bought it, register it, and you get some perks or benefits or whatever, things like that. And then if it is a serious problem, it'll make the news, right? This is going to burn your house down.
Right. If there's a safety issue, definitely will be usually put on a national alert for people having that product.
But you had mentioned that you'd gotten this little USB charger thing that plugged a little knob that plugged in the wall, and it failed. And you're saying it's $15. I'm not even going to bother telling them about it. You know, I was surprised you didn't take it apart. But the idea is if they said, oh, we need to warn people that if you drop it, it might not work anymore. Well, first off, the marketing guys will say, no, you're not going to do that.
Exactly.
We're not going to admit there's a failure.
Second of all, the general public is probably expecting that dropping is not going to be a problem because they've dropped lots of their little wall adapters and
power bricks and everything else.
Yeah, all those kinds of things. And they're pretty solid, actually. They're generally very stable. But and, you know, they're not going to get back these units to go troubleshoot them because I threw mine away. They'd have to pay me. I mean, it's more cost and effort on my part to send it back than the thing is worth.
Yep.
So for those kind of products, I don't know how companies best handle that because they know if they're going to fail in the field, I mean, they have a risk of having continuous failures without notifying the customer or recalling it or sending out another one that has an improved or more reliable fix to it.
Well, they'll lose market share at some point.
They're going to lose market share at some point if they don't address it and just let it lie out there in the field and get cumulative higher, you know, failure rates and people just lose. Or, of course, today's internet communication, everybody starts putting on the Amazon reviews or their Google reviews. They'll start maybe dinging it, putting in negative comment.
You know, and I look at that. If I'm looking at, you know, there's a couple different cables I'm interested in, and one of them has got, you know, 4,001 reviews, you know, and they don't work out of the package, where the other one's getting 4 and 5 stars. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, it's a dollar more, but I don't want to deal with it not working.
Right. And that's great. The feedback from the field is now very high, even if the company doesn't realize it. Yeah. I mean, I bet you they're monitoring the stars rating and comments back. And that's certainly now a new avenue for companies to monitor their quality or reliability is to review especially for low cost products, that aren't worth sending back, that would be a new channel that didn't exist before for them to instantly see on a continuous basis whether their product is reliable in the field. Yeah. And this is, you know, another thing that we didn't have before, other than, you know, writing letters or some awkward old, which was a lot of effort.
Send a fax.
Click on a page, put your star rating and then a comment.
Yeah.
And I've certainly done that. I put, you know, one star for a product that, you know, failed quickly or wasn't the right size or, you know.
Yeah. Well, not your blenders, I hope. you guys just abuse blenders. But the idea is that, I mean, let's say you're working in a company and you're making a product. Let's say it's some networking box, right? It's not a, it's could be used at a home or a small business. It's sold through big box stores or online, right? So it's got some volume and you're working away in the lab and you find, oh, you know, in this case, in this particular circumstance, it will fail. It will just go cold, right? Let's avoid the safety issues, because I think the safety issues are, that's just plain common sense. You stop production, you do what you can to stop sales, you do what you can to recall or notify people to, hey, stop using this, it's not safe, return it. So you got to bite the bullet there and make it safe for as many of your customers as you possibly can. And then it's usually the inside the company's like, all right, we need to understand this. Let's solve it. And we'll get back in production. We'll replace it for other folks. So,
and certain industries do that real well. Of course, with automobiles, that's pretty tight.
Yeah. Most electronics companies I've worked with, when it's a safety issue, they take it very seriously. Right. And I've rarely run into people that go, nah. And those are usually the results of end up being a lawsuit. It's like,
and we know the liability.
Yeah. Then it's liability stuff.
Right. So it's just a cost.
Right. So let's say it's not a safety issue, but it goes cold or it doesn't work or doesn't work as expected. And the customers say, hey, it failed. Right. And if it's at a certain price point, they're going to complain or send it back or get a refund or, you know, do something like that. But it gets gray. I think, as you pointed out, is that if it's a lower price point, well, if I even want to spend the energy to do it, I'll give them a bad review to warn other people of it. But let's say you're in the lab though, and you're working away and you say, all right, here's a circumstance that occurs that causes it to freeze and it takes a factory reset to get it running again.
Right. Right.
What's your first question when you've run into something like that?
Depending on how serious it is to what I'm doing, you know, if it's a reboot, whatever, that's that may be one type of issue.
Well, I'm saying it's a factory reset. They got to send it back to the factory. Okay. You got to open it up. You got to do something to it that you don't expect a customer to be able to do.
I guess I'd go first to the internet and look at, put that product, so do a search on that and see if other people are having this kind of problem. Mm-hmm. And if there's an easy solution, a firmware update, something I can solve this from.
Mm-hmm.
If I see that there's a lot of people commenting on it and, you know, it's going to be consistent, you know, that'll make me go a different direction, maybe buy a different brand of that product to replace.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that you're a customer of this. I'm saying, let's say you're the reliability engineer on this team.
I'm the reliability engineer.
And you could go online and find out if nobody's ever mentioned it. Maybe it's such a corner case that nobody will find it. Or if you see a few comments and now you understand what the mechanism is, and let's say it's some phenomena that will affect, you know, 25% of your population.
Right. I would go to management then and I'd make a business case or it's at least raise the level of concern to them that, you know, again, this is going to affect future sales, perception, brand quality, brand perception on reliability, and that, you know, that they have to allocate maybe what's been produced recently and give it to me, give me some samples, see if I can reproduce it in a lab under certain condition and try to identify what the mechanism is or what the weakness in the product is, so that either we can maybe provide a firmware, sometimes, you know, a software patch, or can solve the problem, or at least identify what the problem is for the products you're producing now so that you can eliminate the problem.
Right.
And the other thing is, depending on how serious it is, notifying the customers that this issue arises when you do this, mm-hmm. and that we're sending out a replacement box or a different model or some, you know, giving a customer up front knowledge that they're aware of a problem that mm-hmm. they want to fix.
Well, that's proactive as opposed to, and I ran into that this morning. I was loading up a driver for a tablet I'm using for drawing. And so I loaded the most recent driver and for the operating system, and it loaded up, and then it gave me instead of just being an additional document, say read me first or known issues and some other separate file, it popped up. Part of the installation process, which says, here are a few such circumstances that you should be aware of, because although they're rare, they can cause problems with the system, this product. So, and they listed like six things. So, you know, if it's tethered to an iPad and does this and does that. And if it does, you know, it was all these weird cases like doesn't apply. But I thought that was, rather than me running into one of those issues and going, oh, what's going on, and spend an hour troubleshooting it,
right,
and then go find their known issues document,
right,
or call customer service, oh yeah, we know about that, you can't do that, and like, well, why didn't you tell me that? And so I thought that was brilliant that they made it part of the installation process, saying, all right, well, you're on a Mac, you're doing this, you might, if you have any of these circumstances, this might not work for you. And I thought that was brilliant, but it's rare that I see a proactive, you know, here's the known issues type thing.
Yeah, of course, when you're given all those kind of conditions that it may not work, I'm also wondering why couldn't the engineers figure out how to make it work under those conditions?
Yeah, but you also see that the marketing folks make it very clear that we just upgraded your software. Or you just got the new widget. Here's what's new. Yeah. You can go faster. It does this. It does that. It'll go in blue color now. It only used to do blue with a green tint. Now it does really blue, you know, whatever is like, all right, what's broken? what are the known issues? What's not going to work here?
And I wish
you know, Adobe.
They add features. They may add features, and you know, especially certainly Apple, and all the smartphone manufacturers upgrade their software constantly.
Oh yeah,
and you know, you're getting updates all the time, mostly for security, which is a big problem. But sometimes it's features and refinements and things like that. But you know, it's hard to test all those. Corner cases and all the apps that it could interface with. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably one of the big obstacles to releasing a revision of software, is now the complexity of the internet and the iOS stores and everything like that is tremendous, and you can't possibly test. Even against 1,000 apps,
you just can't get there from here.
And wouldn't do that.
No, you know, and it's...
So you kind of fly in the field, actually, in a way.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to this poor reliability guy that, you know, discovers this. And so you went into, well, let's do some failure analysis. Let's figure out how big of an issue this is. Does this affect, like, two people, only once out of the million we ship? Or is this going to affect 20% or some significant number? And what do we do?
You first have to realize the scale of the problem. That's either you go to the internet and see, you know, it's causing a significant percentage, or you know, you're working a multi-parallel approach. You're doing in-house validation or verification that there is a problem or there isn't. You're doing research on the lot and component lots of that could cause.
Is it isolated to one batch of silicon?
Right.
You know, for something.
So it requires a broad investigation. But you know, if that product is still under manufacturing or still being manufactured, you want to quickly get some of those samples and see if you can reproduce it in whatever stress. And usually it takes some kind of stress to accelerate that mechanism to appear, because it didn't happen on the bench when you shipped it, or it didn't happen, you know, when you're doing your final test, or the company.
If you were looking in the right place.
Right. But as we all know, new things come about through new technologies being developed and interfaced with your product that weren't in existence before.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't exist when you were designing the product.
Well, and then customers, like we were talking in our last episodes, the expectations are, you know, well, I should be able to drop this, or it shouldn't have a problem with this, or I should be able to put it in my, integrate it with my system and be backward compatible and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, we've got more and more expectations, but I think the issue is that, and I like the way you phrased it, Kirk, is that it's there's many facets to this. One is, what's the nature of this problem, the root cause, and is this going to affect all products and all customers, or is it going to affect very rare, or is it a batch problem? Is it a particular line of the factory? Can we isolate it? Can we narrow it down to scope of this problem? I think the first step, and we mentioned it at the start, is it a safety issue? Because if it just turns into a flamethrower and that's not what the product is, that's usually not a good sign.
No.
Right.
No,
but that takes it off in a different track.
Right. That puts it in a high level of litigation and
We don't want to go there. Yeah.
Liability.
But at some point, even, you know, with a safe, if it fails cold, fails safely, and it's, and by failing doesn't mean that you lose navigation on your aircraft now, and then that's a problem. But the idea is that at one other point is when do you bring in marketing and the customer service folks and saying, all right, here's what we know and don't know. What are you hearing? And they're going to say is, well, what should we tell people? Right. And it brings me to, it was one that I learned way back when I first got into reliability, and I was working with suppliers, and I was complaining to my mentor. I said, I just got this product back. This unique little module board that we were using on our product, and it failed. And I hadn't even gotten it to failure analysis or anything else. But the division that was having the problem saying, hey, we're getting a lot of these. Can you sort this out for us? So I called a vendor and saying, hey, I need a return authorization. And goes, oh, don't worry about it. We know what it is. It's ESD. You guys are not handling it correctly, and it's ESD sensitive, so it's probably just shorted out. You got to fix your system. And it says, you don't even know what product I'm talking about. I hadn't told you.
Already had an answer.
You already had an answer. And so I was telling my mentor about it, and he said, oh, yeah, that's excuse number two. Really? And he goes, yeah, there's five standard excuses that vendors always give you. Oh, we know about that. It's already been fixed. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
or it's ESD. Or this is the only time we've ever heard of this. This must be unique to you. Four is, it's obviously your fault. And they might phrase it more politely. And he went on. And I was and over the years, there's vendor after vendor after vendor that go, oh, it's ESD. I'm like, really? It's the most difficult failure mechanism to find, because you get this pinhole on two gates on a chip, and you just can't see it. And he goes, yep, that's what it is. Really? How do you know that? Are you clairvoyant? You know, it's like, what? Yeah, we already know about it.
Absolutely. Your particular product, your particular device, and we see that when we decapsulated it and did a careful inspection of it.
Yeah.
Well, wait, I haven't sent it to you yet. Well,
that's what it's going to be. We have a standard form for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Or customer abuse, or no trouble found, or, you know, it's just rubber stamped. And I was like, no. Now, part of the process, I think, is to avoid that, is go, all right, if you've already know about the problem, then you also have to be able to tell a customer, here's the nature of the problem. Here's the scope. Here's what we're doing about it. Here's what you can do about it. You know, it's, you lay out, here's what we know and don't know. And don't just, oh yeah, we got it under control and fixed, buy a new one. Like, no.
No.
Come on, give me the whole story here.
send it back and we'll replace it.
Yeah. Well, and I've had that. I think we talked about one of the early podcasts we did is I had, it was an Android phone or yeah. No, it wasn't. It was the Samsung phone. And I used a phone jack or a earbuds on a jack and the, mm-hmm. the connector for that, where I plugged it into the phone, mm-hmm. failed. And I, at the time I went on the phone all the time. So my arm would get numb holding the phone up to my head. So I couldn't use the phone jack thing and it didn't have Bluetooth long ago. And they said, oh, we'll FedEx out a new one to you, put it back in the box that it comes in and send it back to us. Okay. 2 months later, same thing. And the excuse was, oh, it's pretty rare that that happens. We'll just send you a new phone. And I'm out of a phone for a day, you know?
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Come on, you guys.
Some things you're really dependent on and you can't send it back, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Without a severe cost to your business or, you know, your.
Well, they were good enough to send me the phone, the new phone, and then you spend the time to transfer everything and get it up and running. Yeah. Right. And then I put the old phone in the box and sent it back to them. So that was nice that they did that. Yeah. I had the HP laptop that failed and they wanted me to send it off to them for a week to 10 days. To see if they can fix it. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
All your data's on there and
my whole business is on there. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And so anyway, but part of it is that if you run into an issue, we already summarized, safety goes in a different tangent. That's a different thing. And it should be pretty common sense. Two is, well, what's the scope? Can you isolate it to, is it all products or some or none? And then what can you do about it? Is it time to, if you really don't know what the issue is and it's a big scope, well, shut down the factory, And if you isolate it to a component and you call the vendor and they say, oh, it's ESD. Well, one, don't believe them.
First of all, that's their standard answer. In fact, it's really important for you to do an independent investigation, and do your own, root cause, even decapsulation, go to a lab.
Yep.
And I've done this and, little varactor diodes off to an independent lab because I knew I wasn't going to get the right answer from Toshiba.
That's right.
Who made the part and they weren't going to care.
Yeah.
So, well,
for some groups, they do actually a pretty good job, but it's rare.
Some do.
It's like one in 10 that I've ever done. So I said, don't send everything off until you need to do your. You're the one that's interested in the failure analysis. You do it. And,
right. Depending on the size of your company and what percentage you're of their customer base. If you're a Dell, they'll probably do quite a good job for you. If you're small 1,000 units a month kind of place, no, they're not going to be too interested in that.
Well, no, I was at HP and I got all five excuses on a regular basis. It didn't matter what size you were. Unless you start getting lawyers involved and procurement guys involved and everything else. But I think the issue is that if you know about a problem, there's a number of steps that can go to that. But the idea is that, failures occur and they will occur and we can learn from those. And part of it is, as you mentioned, Kirk, is that, we have different vehicles now, even for low cost ones, to go look at reviews and, on Amazon and other places and see what the chatter is.
Right. And of course, I've mentioned Consumer Reports all the time, that there's a annual surveys of all the readers and, to send back their feedback on their product reliability. And this can be really good for products over a year or 2 years old, because like cars, you may not get those kind of reviews online for a product.
Not right away. No, but I'm thinking, I can't imagine the reviews you've done on blenders. We have to find the shows that we've talked about.
To me, it's kind of a, I don't know. I haven't really fed back, that this is a crappy blender. First of all, because I don't even remember where I bought it from by that. And second, I'd say it's user failure.
High altitude ice or something you're using.
Something like that. Who knows?
So anyway, if you've, if you're listening to this and you're kind of wrestling it from time to time, dealing with a either you're suspect you have a problem. It could be from field data. It could be from online reviews. It could be from internal testing, or you have a known problem. You know, a step, and we didn't really explore this all much, but I find it useful is, you know, set up a flow chart. Here's what you're going to do, and here's the steps you're going to take, and have an ability to say, all right, here's the process, folks. Let's get a team together and let's go solve this. Right. And it will save you time to, instead of inventing that as you go. Hopefully you don't have to do it very often. But if you've got an issue like this or a good couple of tips that maybe we've missed, I'm sure we missed a few, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there. You can let us know. Or you can find Kirk or I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or on our About pages on Ascendo. And as always, you know that we really do enjoy hearing from you and have you join the conversation. So with that, Kirk, let's go figure out what else is breaking in our house.
Okay. Hopefully you will have a reliable week here. And certainly it's always good to talk to you, Fred. And listeners, thank you for listening and let us know what you think. Give us some questions. We'll hopefully give you some feedback.
Well, definitely will. All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.